KOA1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. Today, Faith Perlow brings us Ask a Teacher. I report about a new holiday book that follows up on Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And we close the show with an American story. We hear The Boarded Window by Ambrose Bierce. But first, here's Brian Lynn.
Life expectancy in the United States rose by about 1 year in 2022 following earlier decreases linked to the COVID-19 pandemic. Life expectancy predicts the average number of years a baby born in a given year can expect to live. Federal data showed that in 2022, U.S. life expectancy rose from 76.4 years to 77.5 years. Researchers from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said 2022's increase came largely because of disappearing COVID-19 cases. For many years, life expectancy for Americans generally rose a little bit nearly every year. But about 10 years ago, the rate flattened and even decreased in some years. Those drops were blamed on drug overdose deaths and suicides. The number of U.S. suicides reached an all-time high last year, a separate CDC report found. The national suicide rate also saw its highest level since 1941. U.S. drug overdose deaths rose slightly in 2022 after much larger increases during the COVID-19 pandemic. During the pandemic, U.S. life expectancy dropped from 78 years and 10 months in 2019 to 77 years in 2020. Then in 2021, the rate dropped further to 76 years and 5 months. Elizabeth Arias is a researcher for the CDC who worked on the latest report. She told the Associated Press the U.S. life expectancy rate was clearly hurt by COVID-19 and will take some time before we're back to where we were in 2019. But Arias noted there were several favorable developments. For example, all the groups by race and sex experienced increases in life expectancy, she said. Stephen Wolfe, a life expectancy researcher at Virginia Commonwealth University, said he expects the U.S. to one day get back to pre-pandemic levels. But he added, that is not a great place to be. Life expectancy in 2022 increased the most for American Indian and Alaska Native non-Hispanic newborns. The rate went from 65.6 to 67.9, followed by an increase of 2.2 years for Hispanic newborns from 77.8 to 80. The life expectancy for Black non-Hispanic Americans increased by 1.6 years from 71.2 to 72.8. Researchers noted that people in that group were more severely affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. Life expectancy increased by 1 year for Asian non-Hispanic babies to 84.5 years, and by 0.8 years for white non-Hispanic babies to 77.5. Life expectancy in the U.S. remains longer for females. In 2020, the difference between the two sexes reached 6 years, a level not seen since 1996. In 2022, the difference narrowed to 5.4 years, down from 5.8 years in 2021. Life expectancy in the U.S. continues to be lower than that of numerous other countries. And the latest report shows that the U.S. did not rebound as quickly after the pandemic as some other countries, including France, Italy, Spain, and Sweden. I'm Brian Lynn.
Has passed since the Grinch stole Christmas from the imaginary town of Whoville. Now the green creature is back in a follow-up book called How the Grinch Lost Christmas. And he wants to prove to the Whos of Whoville that he has changed. The Grinch is a character from the 1957 children's book, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, by Dr. Seuss. In that story, the Grinch tries to ruin Whoville's Christmas by stealing their gifts, ornaments, and food. But later, he learns that the holiday is about spending time with family and friends. Dr. Seuss's book sold millions of copies and was translated into several languages. The story has been turned into a television program, 2 movies, and even a Broadway musical. Random House, the book's publisher, said in a statement, "One of the most asked questions we receive from Seuss fans of all ages is, what do you think happened to the Grinch after he stole Christmas?" So the decision was made to write a new book to follow up on the story. The new book, How the Grinch Lost Christmas, starts a year later in Whoville. The Grinch wants to prove that his heart has grown to love the holiday. The Grinch had been patiently waiting all year to celebrate Christmas and bring the Who's cheer, and to show every Who he was different now. "I've changed," thought the Grinch, "and I'll prove it. But how?" So the Grinch tries to win a Whoville's Christmas Award by making the largest and the best Christmas tree the Whos have ever seen. But things do not go as planned. Young Cindy Lou Who wins the contest. The Grinch is shocked, and his heart turns ice cold. The green creature threatens to leave Whoville for real this time. Cindy Lou reaches out and tells the Grinch that her tree has ornaments from everyone in Whoville, except one. In the end, the Grinch returns with an ornament for Cindy Lou and regains his spirit of giving. Dr. Seuss, whose real name was Theodore Seuss Geisel, died in 1991. So Alastair Heim, who has worked on several Dr. Seuss books, wrote the new story. And Aristides Ruiz provided the illustrations. Heim told the Associated Press in an email last February, "All throughout writing the story, I couldn't fully believe that I was actually getting to play in the amazing creative sandbox Dr. Seuss created all those decades ago." Ruiz said he jumped at the chance to draw for the book. But he said the work on the new book was difficult because it is such a big part of the Christmas tradition in the United States. I'm Katie Weaver.
Hi there. This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question about the difference between the words price and rate. Hello, VOA Learning English. I am confused by the words price and rate. Could you please explain these words for me? Irfan from Pakistan. This is a great question, Irfan. Both words can describe an amount of money in exchange for either goods, services, or a certain amount of time spent. We use them in different situations. Rate has more meanings and uses as well. Let's start with price. Price is a noun that can be countable or singular. As a countable noun, it means the amount of money that is exchanged for something. It can also be the amount asked for or paid. The price for 12 eggs was almost $5. The asking price of the house was $300,000, but it was sold for under $289,000 after negotiations. As a singular noun, price is the cost, result, or loss that is paid to get something else. Amanda's loss of a flexible schedule is the price of going back to school. We can also use price as a verb that takes a direct object. Mark priced his used TV at $200. Let's look more closely at rate now. A rate is a cost or value per unit for services or time. This is different from the price of something. For example, you hire a gardener, and their rate is $50 an hour. If the gardener worked 3 hours at a rate of $50 per hour, then the total price is $150. Rate can also be used to talk about amounts, degrees, or speed of something in comparison to something else. Your heart rate is the number of beats per minute. The United States obesity rate is almost double that of Italy. Rate can also be a verb that means to apply a value, worth, strength, or estimation. It can take a direct object or not. Finland, Denmark, and Iceland rate their happiness level as very high. Saratoga Springs is rated as one of the best small cities in the U.S. Please let us know if these explanations and examples have helped you, Irfan. Do you have a question about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish at voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
Our story today is called The Boarded Window. It was written by Ambrose Bierce. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
In 1830, only a few miles away from what is now the great city of Cincinnati, Ohio, lay a huge and almost endless forest. The area had a few settlements established by people of the frontier. Many of them had already left the area for settlements further to the west, but among those remaining was a man who had been one of the first people to arrive there. He lived alone, in a house of logs, surrounded on all sides by the great forest. He seemed a part of the darkness and silence of the forest, for no one had ever known him to smile or speak an unnecessary word. His simple needs were supplied by selling or trading the skins of wild animals in the town. His little log house had a single door. Directly opposite was a window. The window was boarded up. No one could remember a time when it was not. And no one knew why it had been closed. It surely was not because of the man's dislike of light and air. Sometimes he could be seen lying in the sun on his doorstep. I imagine there are few people living today who ever knew the secret of that window. But I am one, as you shall see. The man's name was said to be Murlock. He appeared to be 70 years old, but he was really 50. Something other than years had been the cause of his aging. His hair and long, full beard were white. His gray, lifeless eyes were sunken. His face was wrinkled. He was tall and thin, with drooping shoulders, like someone with many problems. I never saw him. These details I learned from my grandfather. He told me the man's story when I was a boy. He had known him when living nearby in that early day. One day, Murlock was found in his cabin, dead. It was not a time and place for medical examiners and newspapers. I suppose it was agreed that he had died from natural causes, or I should have been told and should remember. I know only that the body was buried near the cabin, next to the burial place of his wife. She had died so many years before him that local tradition noted very little of her existence. That closes the final part of this true story. Except for the incident that followed many years later. With a fearless spirit, I went to the place and got close enough to the ruined cabin to throw a stone against it. I ran away to avoid the ghost which every well-informed boy in the area knew haunted the spot. But there is an earlier part to this story, supplied by my grandfather. When Murlock built his cabin, he was young, strong, and full of hope. He began the hard work of creating a farm. He kept a gun, a rifle, for hunting to support himself. He had married a young woman in all ways worthy of his honest love and loyalty. She shared the dangers of life with a willing spirit and a light heart. There is no known record of her name or details about her. They loved each other and were happy. One day, Murlock returned from hunting in a deep part of the forest. He found his wife sick with fever and confusion. There was no doctor or neighbor within miles. She was in no condition to be left alone while he went to find help. So Murlock tried to take care of his wife and return her to good health. But at the end of the third day, she fell into unconsciousness and died. From what we know about a man like Murlock, we may try to imagine some of the details of the story told by my grandfather. When he was sure she was dead, Murlock had sense enough to remember that the dead must be prepared for burial. He made a mistake now and again while performing this special duty. He did certain things wrong, and others which he did correctly were done over and over again. He was surprised that he did not cry, surprised and a little ashamed. Surely it is unkind not to cry for the dead. "Tomorrow," he said out loud, "I shall have to make the coffin and dig the grave, and then I shall miss her when she is no longer in sight. But now, she is dead, of course. But it is all right. It must be all right somehow. Things cannot be as bad as they seem." He stood over the body of his wife in the disappearing light. He fixed the hair and made finishing touches to the rest. He did all of this without thinking, but with care. And still through his mind ran a feeling that all was right, that he should have her again as before, and everything would be explained. Murlock had no experience in deep sadness. His heart could not contain it all. His imagination could not understand it. He did not know he was so hard struck. That knowledge would come later and never leave. Deep sadness is an artist of powers that affects people in different ways. To one, it comes like the stroke of an arrow, shocking all the emotions to a sharper life. To another, it comes as the blow of a crushing strike. We may believe Murlock to have been affected that way. Soon after he had finished his work, he sank into a chair by the side of the table upon which the body lay. He noted how white his wife's face looked in the deepening darkness. He laid his arms upon the table's edge and dropped his face into them, tearless and very sleepy. At that moment, a long screaming sound came in through the open window. It was like the cry of a lost child in the far deep of the darkening forest, but the man did not move. He heard that unearthly cry upon his failing sense, again and nearer than before. Maybe it was a wild animal, or maybe it was a dream, for Murlock was asleep. Some hours later, he awoke, lifted his head from his arms, and listened closely. He knew not why. There, in the black darkness by the side of the body. He remembered everything without a shock. He strained his eyes to see he knew not what. His senses were all alert. His breath was suspended. His blood was still as if to assist the silence. Who, what had awakened him, and where was it? Suddenly the table shook under his arms. At the same time he heard, or imagined he heard, a light, soft step, and then another. The sounds were as bare feet walking upon the floor. He was afraid beyond the power to cry out or move. He waited there in the darkness through what seemed like centuries of such fear. Fear as one may know, but yet live to tell. He tried, but failed to speak the dead woman's name. He tried, but failed to stretch his hand across the table to learn if she was there. His throat was powerless. His arms and hands were like lead. Then something most frightful happened. It seemed as if a heavy body was thrown against the table with a force that pushed against his chest. At the same time, he heard and felt the fall of something upon the floor. It was so violent a crash that the whole house shook. A fight followed, and a confusion of sounds impossible to describe. Murlock had risen to his feet. Extreme fear had caused him to lose control of his senses. He threw his hands upon the table. Nothing was there. There is a point at which fear may turn to insanity, and insanity incites to action. With no definite plan and acting like a madman, Murlock ran quickly to the wall. He seized his loaded rifle and, without aim, fired it. The flash from the rifle hit the room with a clear brightness. He saw a huge, fierce panther dragging the dead woman toward the window. The wild animal's teeth were fixed on her throat. Then there was darkness, blacker than before. And silence. When he returned to consciousness, the sun was high, and the forest was filled with the sounds of singing birds. The body lay near the window, where the animal had left it when frightened away by the light and sound of the rifle. The clothing was ruined. The long hair was in disorder. The arms and legs lay in a careless way, and a pool of blood flowed from the horribly torn throat. The ribbon he had used to tie the wrists was broken. The hands were tightly closed, and between the teeth was a piece of the animal's ear.
That's all the time we have for today's show, but join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.